Okay, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everyone. My name is Linda and I'm a compulsive overeater coming to you from Sweden. Before I start, I would like to just take a second to ground myself. And I'm actually going to read for you the third step prayer in Icelandic, which is the language that I used for. That I have used for most of my recovery. Skapari minn. Nú ég reiðubúin að leggja mig með öllum mínum kostum og göllum algjörlega þína hendur. Ég byrði að losa mig við alla þá skapgerðabresti sem hindri mig í að vera þér og náungum mínum að gagni. Gjum mig styrk til að gera vilja þinn er ég held áfram hérna. Amen. So, anyways, this is the longest share that I've ever been asked to do. And I've been a little bit nervous about doing it. So I wrote a whole bunch of stuff last night, and I may follow some of that, or I may get completely off track. But I'm going to trust that my higher power is with me today. And if I say anything that does not sound right to you or is not in accordance with the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, just remember that everything I say is my story or my opinion. And I'm not representing OA as a whole or anything like that. And welcome to any newcomers at today's meeting. We are here because of you. Helping others is the best way we have to maintain our abstinence. And without newcomers that need our help, our program would not be strong. And the Fellowship of OA would not likely have survived all these years. And that's why I chose to read the third step prayer this morning, because it talks about our ability to be of use to others. And that it's a prayer that is very important, and that, in my opinion, at least, I need to read it basically every, or say it every day. My story, what happened, what I did, and where I am now. I think that's what I'm supposed to be sharing about today. And I'll do my best to share with you not only my strength, my experience and strength, but also some hope. Hope is what we want to give each other and newcomers. So to go back to the beginning and try to make a long story as short as possible, I think it was no accident that OA was founded in 1960, specifically on January 19th. I was born exactly 9 months later. I guess I've always been an overeater. In the beginning, I didn't stand out so much. I was the middle of five children, and all of us loved to eat as much as our grandmothers and mother loved to cook and bake. Okay, now what happened here? I lost my place. Sorry about that. I grew up on the prairies of Canada. And in those days, we set the table for meals. Setting the table always included a huge stack of bread and lots of butter, as well as at least one large jug of milk. I have no idea now whether that was to save money on the more expensive things and fill us up with cheaper things, but it was what it was. It was tradition and it was just normal. Most days, in addition to the full meal that was on the table, I'd have a few pieces of bread and a few glasses of milk. And like any good home in the 60s, there was always dessert of some kind. And we all five of us groaned or complained if it happened to be fruit and not cake, cookies, pie, ice cream, etc. I guess the first time I realized that I was different was around the time I was 11. My best friend's grandfather, who was in his 90s at the time, was watching us climb a tree outside in their backyard. And he said to me, "You sure like your porridge, don't you?" After that, I started to really be more self-conscious about my body and worry about what others thought. I inherited height genetics from my mom's side of the family, so I only grew to all of 5'1" or about 154 centimeters. I can often remember wishing and praying that I'd keep growing so that I would be able to get to a better height and be able to eat more, because I had learned that, you know, the taller you are, the more you can weigh and still be healthy. But in my teenage years and all growing up, I had a lot of friends. I belonged to just about every club in school, and dragged friends along with me to do things. I did well in school, but hated to be known as the brain. I dreamed, instead of being one of the pretty girls, that the boys followed around. I had lots of friends who were boys, but nothing romantic like many of my friends. I was always the one that guys would come to for advice about presents, dates, etc. At 14, I thought I would become a famous actress after having a lead role in a school play. And what part do you think I played? Lucy in Charlie Brown. How ironic that I played probably one of the bossiest women, most controlling women in the history of comics. Anyways, I never became a famous actress. I began to babysit at the age of 12. And today I can admit that there were three reasons why I really liked to babysit. I liked babies and kids, which was a good thing. But two, I really liked the stuff that the parents would leave for me to eat once the kids were asleep. And three, I loved the freedom I got from the money that I made. And the fact that that was my money and I could do with it what I wanted. My babysitting years came up very clearly when I first worked the steps. First, because I had often stolen food, extra food from cupboards or fridges, because it was never enough that was left out for me. And second, because I was able to realize that those experiences were the beginning of my closet eating and my dishonesty with food. How stupid is closet eating? I mean, really, everybody can see if you're eating more than you need. I loved the hours to myself where I could eat and not have to share with anybody else. Growing up in a family with four siblings, you know, we always had to share everything, and it was never enough for me. And I found financial freedom from that as well. And I'd take the bus downtown to a big department store that had the best candy selection. And I'd bring my fix back home and hide it away. I shared a room with my sister, but I made sure that she didn't know what I had. And even then I realized it wasn't normal because I never told anybody what I was doing. I pretended I was going to look for clothes or something else, but anyways, and if, you know, mom offered to take me down, if she was going to this big department store, she'd offer to take me because she knew I loved going there. And of course, I never wanted to go with her because what was the fun of that? And I was active as a child in dance, swimming, and even synchronized swimming. But at the age of 13 or 14, I quit the team and became much more sedentary. But when I look at pictures of me from those years, I probably had only about, I don't know, 15 kilos or a little over 30 pounds extra. But I still felt as a teenager that I was really fat. And so at less than 18, I took my first geographic cure. I convinced my parents, because I didn't want to make a decision about going to university. I convinced my parents that it would be a good idea to go to Iceland and learn the language of my grandparents and you know, stay there for a year and learn about the culture and everything. But once there, I had to find a new way of binging. I was living in different conditions. I had to find other things to binge on, and not everything that I was used to was available. But that year, I also was introduced to my first really serious diet program. And I returned home following that year, having lost quite a bit of weight and feeling better than I'd felt about myself since I was 12 or so. So here I am at 19, and I go visit my grandparents, my grandfather, who was 90, no, in his 80s probably at the time, late 70s, early 80s. He was always very direct and honest, and certainly not an addict or a codependent in any way. He said to me, "You know, everyone's been telling me how much weight you've lost, but you still look pretty fat to me." I laughed it off, but it hurt. And it's still like I had to work with that in my steps. It was a resentment, and I'm sure that it started a new period of binging. And I had no idea really at the time how much connection there was between the mind and my emotions and eating. So for the next 10 years, I moved back and forth a lot between Canada and Iceland, switching jobs, getting married, immigrating with my Icelandic husband to Canada, returning to Iceland, having a child, divorcing, living as a single mom for a year in Canada. And during those years, in my 20s, I managed to get to ideal weight first around my wedding, and then about a year after having my daughter. And each time it lasted less than a year. And the weight came back on quickly. I also exercised, ran, swam, aerobics with all the flashy colors and outfits of the 80s. But then I wouldn't exercise for a long time in between. Either I was dieting and exercising, probably over-exercising, or binging and being a real couch potato. But when it comes to the traits of addicts, I had many of those and still do if I'm not abstinent and working a strong program. I joke with people that I left Canada in 1988 because my father changed my tire. I know it sounds stupid. It was the middle of winter, and I was on my way to my apartment from grocery shopping with my 4-year-old daughter. At 20 below, we were both dressed warmly. So when I got a flat tire, I left the car on the side of the road and walked the 10 minutes home. I then called my mom to ask her to come and babysit while I went to change the tire. I knew how to do it, and I was, after all, an independent young woman of the 80s. As luck would have it, mom was out and dad answered the phone. He said he'd come. He finally got out of me what the issue was and why I wanted to talk to my mother. He said he'd come. But of course, when he came, he refused to babysit and he wanted my car keys. We had a discussion, and he ended up winning like he usually did. He went and changed the tire, and it infuriated me so much because he was infringing on my independence that I soon started making plans to go back to Iceland. I never told this story before my parents had both passed away. And of course, it isn't entirely true. This wasn't the reason for my leaving. But I really was angry and resentful at him for years for something as silly and something that was only meant to help. Today, I gladly say yes if anybody asks to change my tire, believe me. I didn't go through any abuse or anything as a child. And sometimes I felt that I didn't belong in the program because of that. But it doesn't matter to me why I am a compulsive overeater. I just am, and I need to work on that. And trying to figure that out, what the real is reason is, isn't helpful at all. The only thing that's important to me is admitting that I am a compulsive overeater, and then I can change. So fast forward a number of years, during which when I went up and down between 60 and 90 kilos, or 130 to 200 pounds. Actually, the downtimes happened slowly, and the uptimes happened really quickly, because I was a binger, to beat all bingers. Losing both my parents suddenly at a relatively young age, within 3 months of each other, really made me think about my health for the following year. But the numbers on the scale and working out and everything, they soon gave way to binging. And I still had not understood that I could not control what was wrong with my head and my body. And then deciding to date again at 40, after being on my own for many years, brought me down closer to a healthy body weight, why not do it for somebody else, eh? My head was crazy and my actions even crazier. So from the time I was around 14, I tried every diet I could get my hands on. When I had money, I would buy the newest magazines or books. I also tried commercial diets, pay-to-weigh programs, and advice
Five
from all.
minutes left, Linda.
Oh, wow. Okay. All kinds of health or holistic professionals. Okay, here we are. Finally, in the fall of 2007, I attended my first OA meeting. What exactly was the catalyst? I'm not sure. But in that meeting, it was on Sunday, October 2007, and it was a big book meeting. Sitting around the table were people that talked like no one I'd ever heard before. They were open and honest. But they were reading from this book called Alcoholics Anonymous. And they were reading a chapter called To the Employer. And as I listened to the reading, I was thinking, like, what am I doing here? What does this have to do with, you know, my weight? But 20 minutes later, the speaker had me completely convinced that it had a whole lot to do with my weight and my compulsive eating. And the other 10 or 12 people in the room continued to make it even clearer. And it, to this day, my favorite meetings are big book meetings. And I'm really looking forward to starting a new big book program next week, actually. All right, so now you know that I've been in the program for almost 14 years, 2007 to 2021. Why am I not a healthy body weight? I haven't always worked the program the way it was written or the way I was told to. My fierce independence is still in my way, my will or God's will. For some long periods in the last 14 years, I've lived almost completely by God's will and my weight has gone down. My mental health has been good. At other, blessingly shorter times, my will has taken over again, and my weight has gone up, and my mental health has gone down. For anybody that's new, my weight doesn't have anything at all to do with my mental health. It just so happens that when I'm working a good program, my mental health is fine. I'm not depressed, and I'm not anxious. Relapse is part of my story. I can't help but talk about it. Otherwise, I'm not being honest. I've had sponsors that I couldn't work with because they didn't listen to me or understand me. My sponsors are never the reason I relapse. If I would try and give you the two probably most likely things that have caused me to relapse, it would be my will in really big capital letters and complacency. Relapse often comes after I've gone through, you know, bad times, because I think everything's really good and I all of a sudden get complacent, that I've got it. And I often think of the paragraph in the big book on the bottom of page 38, where it says, "For we understand ourselves so well after what you have told us that such things cannot happen again." That's me in a nutshell. I convince myself again and again that I can live on knowledge and that I don't need to take the actions. Yesterday, I went for a walk. These days, walking is hard. My body is full of pain and tension. But I go for a 10-minute walk each day now, and some days it's hard to even do that. Anyways, as I was walking yesterday, I was struck with a thought and could only have come from my higher power. This program has a few slogans about for today or one day at a time. But what I have to realize and admit is that, yes, it is a day at a time, but it has to be every day, not just when I feel like it. And so I moved to Malaysia about 5 years ago from Iceland, was without a sponsor for about 4 years. It's not a good idea to sponsor yourself. I am running out of time, but I do want to read because for me, action is what I need to do. You know, nothing works if I don't do the actions. And I wanted to read from May 15th in For Today. Pray to God, but continue to row to shore. God is not my arms and legs. It is up to me to do the footwork. Ours is a program of action. The first two steps require reflection and contemplation. The rest call for direct action. Of course, I do not work a perfect program. When I feel rebellious, as I sometimes do, then I pray to be willing, putting myself and my stubbornness in God's hands. Out of old programming, I still need to be perfect before I can like myself. But God has infinite and unconditional love for me and gives me everything I need, including the willingness to take action. I have but to ask. For today, God does for me what I cannot do for myself, not what I can do. And so what are those actions? I'm just, okay, thanks, Judy. I'm just going to steal a couple of seconds longer. So what are those actions I need to take? I need to start the day by reading On Awakening from the Big Book. And I meditate for 3 minutes. I say a few prayers, usually from this list of prayers that I have. Sometimes something that I just need to say to my higher power. Then I make sure I have an action plan for the day. I need to hear from my sponsor every day. And if not, then from another fellow in the program. I decide to the best of ability what I will eat, my ability, what I will eat during the day and when. And I attend at least one meeting a day. I go about my day using the prayer, God, show me the way of patience, tolerance, kindliness, and love. Some days I need to use that prayer a lot. Other days, maybe only once. The patience part is the hardest part for me. Once the day is over, I go to bed at a decent hour. But I read, before that, I read from the Big Book on page 86, this time before we retire at night, and I journal for a few minutes. And I like to end with a gratitude list. And I started doing that again last night, actually, after I wrote this. And today I am most grateful for the Zoom meetings. This meeting in particular, the meetings at 5 a.m., because last year when I was going through I had been going through a really long relapse, I got back, started attending lots of meetings, and I couldn't believe the number of people that were willing to get up at 5 a.m. in the morning to attend an OA meeting, and it really inspired me. And I hope that I've left something, some hope for all of you today, and with that I pass. Thanks.